This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you very much indeed. And today is our 30th meeting of the Support Organisation and Advisory Committee Accountability Subteam of the Work Stream 2. I'm just getting a little crackle on my line. I'll just see if I can improve the audio for me. Hopefully that is still loud and clear for everyone else. My name is Cheryl Langdon Orr, and we will be doing today's meeting under our normal circumstances, which means whilst we have received two apologies, we will be taking roll call from the Adobe Connect room. However, if you are only on audio, if you could let us know now. Not hearing anybody, we will run with our all too few at this stage, but just enough to run the call number of people. And thank you, Greg. Welcome. We're hopefully getting a few more people to join in as we creep just past the top of the hour. The next thing I'd like to do from an administration point of view is ask if anyone has an update to their statements of interest. Not hearing anybody, we will move past that. Today, as usual, because in particular we have captioning, I would like to remind you all that as you start to make your interventions, if you could name yourselves so that that will allow our captioner and our recording to note who is saying what. And if you can speak as slowly and as clearly as is practical, that will be excellent. It's the intent of today in our call that we will be finishing off our review of the public comments on our last report and to put ourselves in good stead for completion of our documentation and discussion of any changes to our report to make a final report in time for the report to go to the plenary of the Cross Community Working Group. So with that, I'm going to note that Steve Del Bianco, I think, has dialed in and is under somewhat awkward circumstances at an airport somewhere in the world. So he will be somewhat limited in his Adobe Connect activities today, but he will be giving us a brief update on what has been happening since our last meeting, and then we will be jumping right into the main body of today's event, and we will be starting with, I believe, line 32, that's line 3-2, from the document that Steve and Farzaneh and I have recently updated and was not only embedded in your agenda, but also sent to the mailing list. So with that, I'm going to ask you to take over, Steve. Over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's Steve Del Bianco. Last fall, we made it through 31 out of the 42 public comments to which we wanted to respond. Yesterday, in addition to Cheryl's agenda, I circulated a PDF and another link to the latest summary of public comments, and Brenda's going to put it in the Adobe. But with apologies, this is a very wide, small-type Google sheet, and it does not handle well inside of this Adobe View window. It's very challenging to keep it in the right place. So I would encourage people that have access to the email I sent yesterday to retrieve the Google sheet and have it open in another browser window. I've also placed a link to that sheet in the chat on the left side of your screen. Ideally, Cheryl, we would, to recap what we did last time, through the first 31 rows, we made a dozen edits to the comment response. Farzaneh and I have got all those edits made in the Google Sheet, but before we go back to those, we thought it was better to finish 32 through 42 and then go back and look at the edits we've made. I think we can do that in the first half of this call and then turn to the broader report that we have, because Farzaneh was good enough to make a few edits to that report to reflect our public comment response, so we'd be able to do a first reading on our final report as well. Cheryl, if that's satisfactory to you, we can pick it up with row 32. Would that be all right?
Cheryl here for the record. I'm happy, as I said, to let's start at point 32, at row 32, and if we can get a first reading on some of those changes done, that would be excellent as well. Over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Google Sheets does a lot of things, but one thing I can't make it do is to display the row number when I create a PDF, and so one of you geniuses are going to have to show me how to do that one of these days. For the time being, I'll direct you to page 8, where row 32, where we need to start, is the second row down, starting with INTA on track 2. So if I'm not controlling the scroll, then each of you would have to quickly jump to page 8, and you'll see the row that says INTA under track 2, where INTA supported the idea of holding a mutually accountability roundtable. And our response to that is that we do not agree. We have reverted to the original recommendation of not to implement the mutual accountability roundtable. So this is an isolated comment in that they do believe we should have a mutual accountability roundtable, but we believe the significant consensus of this group is not to have it. Part of that was picked up at the last face-to-face meeting when we reviewed public comments. Any comments on this one? I think we resolved our stand on mutual accountability roundtable several weeks ago, so I don't think we need to go back too much into that. The next row, number 33, is the registries.
Steve, it's Alan.
Steve, sorry.
Go ahead, Alan, sorry.
Alan has
your hand. Yeah, thank you. I think the comment should say what you just said, that based on the face-to-face meeting and consensus at the face-to-face meeting and within the work group, we have reverted.
Thank you, Al. We'll make that change several places because the same comment will appear. So, based on the face-to-face and other comments. Okay. Thank you, Al. Okay. The next row is registries, and they supported the conclusion, and therefore we're going to acknowledge their support. The next row is row 34, where the ESSAC does not support the recommendation to do a mutually accountability roundtable, and they propose that they think it's overly formal, and so we'll let them know that we agree, and we revert it to the original recommendation of not to implement the mutual accountability roundtable. So let's go to page 9. Almost done here. It's the GNSO business constituency where we are supporting the recommendation, so all we need to do is to acknowledge that. And we're on track 3. The ISPCP agreed with our recommendation about not implementing IRP for SOs and ACs, so we'll acknowledge their support. The same thing with the non-commercial stakeholders group, who also agreed and supported our recommendation against implementing the IRP. Next, we turn to the ICANN board under track 3. It's the fourth row down in the screen in front of you. For this one, I had asked Herb Way to take a look at it because it involves the ombuds role. In this case, the IRP, the board is noting that if we had a way to have some alternative mechanism to address grievances against an SO, an AC, or the empowered community itself, as an entity. So what we have said in our draft comment is that we will cite the Ombuds Workstream 2 group, and Sebastian is on the call today, fortunately, which argued that the Ombuds does handle these types of complaints and conflicts. Therefore, ICANN, SOs, and ACs, members of those groups, may already take their grievances to the Ombuds office if a SO, AC, or group were not following its processes. Now, the board goes on to suggest that actions of the empowered community should be subject to challenge and grievance procedures. And to that, we disagree. We believe the EC, the empowered community, is not an entity. It is merely the aggregation of decisions that are reached by participating ACs and SOs. And that, however, review by the ombudsman would be appropriate if someone wanted to challenge whether an AC and SO properly reported its decision to the empowered community, and whether the Empowered Community Secretary accurately reported the AC and SO decisions that reflect what the Empowered Community's consensus would be. So let's take a cue on this one to see whether we are on board. Alan, you're first.
I agree with one exception. It is conceivable that the Empowered Community Administration, which is comprised of the representatives from each of the ACs, and which is charged with counting the votes, as it were, counting the yeses and nos and silences, were to report something to the Secretary of the Board that did not reflect what the input was, that should be subject to some level of dispute or complaint. So, for instance, if the fundamental bylaw that just passed had only received two yeses and the rest were silence, and the person fronting for the administration of the EC said, yes, it is passed because we haven't gotten any negatives, that should be subject to dispute.
Alan, take a look at the last line then in yellow where he said, and whether the AC secretary accurately reports AC and SO decisions. Can you help me to rephrase that so it properly reflects? I would have thought that captured what you asked for.
It implies it, but I'm not sure it captures it.
Reports and tallies?
Accurately reports and just disappeared.
Okay. That wasn't me.
Accurately,
those wrote.
I know, Bertie. We really didn't want to see the words that I was reading.
Page 9, please. Thank you. Oh, I see what happened. Bernie figured out how to get the row numbers. Thank you, Bernie. Well done.
Ah. But your timing was really bad. It's now tiny enough that I can't read it, but whether the AC... accurately report, I guess the question is not whether they accurately report the results, but whether they interpret the results properly. I don't think it's called a secretary, by the way. That term is wrong. I'm not quite sure what the right term is, if indeed there is a term. The decisional participants are reported accurately and completely in accordance with the ICANN bylaws. I hope someone captured that.
It should be in the
whether the actions of the decisional participants are. Okay, actions are reported accurately and completely in accordance with the ICANN bylaws. That, I think, captures it.
Alan, when I look at the EC administration in section 6.3 of the bylaws, it says, under A, the decisional participants shall act through the respective chairs or other such persons as may be designated, and they're collectively known as the EC administration.
Mm-hmm.
Each decisional participant shall deliver a written certification from its chairs or co-chairs to the secretary, capital S secretary, designated the individual who should represent the decisional participant
okay.
on the EC
Sorry,
administration.
I...
The word okay. secretary shows up 12 more times under the Empowered
okay,
Community.
Okay, I'm wrong. I didn't recall there was a term. It's there. Use it.
Alan, look in the chat and if the not in the chat, in the transcript, and see if that captures accurately the phrase you had in mind for that last sentence. And if it doesn't, you can just paste it into the chat.
Okay, I don't know where in the chat it is.
Just scroll up an inch or two in the scribe feed.
Oh, in the scribe, you said in the chat, sorry.
Well, while Cheryl's here.
It's Cheryl here. While we finish that, perhaps we can move on to the next person in the queue, Steve, which is Kavush.
Yeah, I already said it's correct with dropping the word in aligned.
All right, I want to be sure that I capture that. Kavush, be patient for just one moment longer.
Okay, I'll read it out again slowly. Whether the actions of the decisional participants or the empowered community decisional participants are reported accurately and completely in accordance with the ICANN bylaws. The term secretary is legitimate, but you don't even need to use it.
Great. Thank you, Alan. Appreciate that. Kavush, thank you for being patient. Cannot hear you, Kavush. Could you try again?
I said that after good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and good everything to everybody. Does the ICANN board, or ICANN, I don't know who said that, propose that ombudsman is the watcher of the AC group, that whether they have done their job properly or not? This is the new task for the ombudsman. I think it should be clarified by the rapporteur of the ombudsman whether this is something that is foreseen in the mandate and duty. I don't think it's right. Maybe the wording of ICANN should be changed, maybe according to what Alan said, to check whether the report has been accurately reflected is something, and to see whether the EC has been properly decided is another thing. I don't agree that such duty be given to ombudsman to check whether EC has been properly acted. Whether the decision has been properly reflected by the secretary or by any entity that is more or less some sort of monitoring, but not the decision. We don't want to increase the power of the ombudsman. Thank you.
Kavush, thank you for that. This is Steve. The board itself, their comment is summarized on the screen in front of you, and they didn't specifically call out the ombuds. Instead, they said, what alternative mechanism might there be? They didn't actually suggest one. And as you know from our prior report, the one we circulated for public comment, we said the IRP was not the right mechanism, but the ombuds could be an appropriate mechanism. In a call we had about 2 months ago with Sebastian and Herb, they verified that a complaint could be brought, and the ombudsman has the capacity and the role of investigating a complaint about whether a decision was properly reflected in the reporting, or whether procedures were followed, and that would be an appropriate role. And then I did hope to turn to Sebastian to verify that the words we're using here, or for Herb, to verify that the words we're using here are within the ombuds scope of business. And Herb has said no audio, and Herb says to us, I would only be involved if somebody complained that the rules were not followed. And that is what we're trying to suggest, is that the procedures were not followed, in which case someone would complain to the ombuds, who would seem to be covered here. Does that answer your question, Kavush?
My question is that what we expect ombudsman to do, to check whether the report has been properly conveyed, or the ombudsman is going to check whether the procedure has been applied by the EC. What is that? What we ask ombudsman to do? And is it included in the duties in the ombudsman in the bachelor's desk? Thank you.
Okay, Kavush, for the abundance of clarity, I'm going to paste into the chat what we are putting into our response. I'll read it to you. It says, review by the ombuds would be appropriate in order to challenge two things. whether an ACNSO properly reported its decision to the EC. Second thing, whether the actions of the decisional participants of the EC are reported accurately and completely in accordance with the ICANN bylaw. So those are the two aspects we think the ombuds would have the ability to investigate. It's not an oversight role per se, but it's something where the ICANN community is reporting to the ombuds, I have a complaint about whether process was followed. Would the ombuds please look into it? Herb has typed into the chat that there is no oversight role yet. That may come at the end of work stream 2 work. Herb, a question for you. Do you need some formal oversight role, or isn't this something you can already respond to? Because we are suggesting that an ICANN community member is complaining that the processes were not followed. Don't you already have the scope to investigate those complaints?
Steve, it's Alan. May I get in?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I think what Herb is saying is someday in the future, he or the person in his office may have the responsibility of verifying, simply being the chief returning officer, as it were, to make sure that everything was followed. At the moment, all we're saying is he may act on a complaint if a complaint is made. So we are not suggesting that he take unilateral action to verify at this point until or unless a complaint is made. But I do have a question that is raised. Is the board, let's say the empowered community reports something and the board believes that the rules were not followed. Is the board empowered to invoke the ombudsman?
Herb,
which reports to the board?
The answer is yes. Herb says yes. That the
okay.
board itself could be a complainant.
Okay. Do we need anything to say the decision is put on hold while there is a complaint?
Alan asks the question whether we want to recommend. This is not in the. It may be in the bylaws, Alan. We should check that to see whether.
I don't think there is anything.
And I don't think we are recommending changes to the bylaws. We've been able to avoid that so far.
Well, if we have to, we have to. We can certainly suggest that it be considered by the board. We don't have to make the recommendation. Anyway, just a thought, because in theory, something, you know, horrible could happen acting on a false report of the empowered community if it's acted on. So there may be, we may need a, what's the effect of an injunction, the equivalent of an injunction. Maybe just note it and pass it on to the face-to-face, to the whole CCWG.
The plenary.
Yeah, plenary, sorry. I'm at a loss for words. I haven't slept much recently.
Okay. So I think we are in agreement that the key is the word complaint. So I have changed our response to say, however, review by the ombuds would be appropriate in response to a complaint about whether an ACSO properly reported its decision to the EC and whether the actions of the decisional participants are reported accurately and completely in accordance with the ICANN bylaws. So now we've made the trigger word here to be complaint. And that means that Herb would have jurisdiction without relying on some recommendation coming out of Workstream 2.
If I may, Steve, Cheryl here.
Please do.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for the record. I just wanted to continue breathing for a second. I just wanted to make sure with that interchange that you and Alan have just gone through. Thank you, Alan, taking us perilously close to additional work and changes rather than finishing the role we have today. However, if Cazous is satisfied, I notice his hand still up because his question was what sort of actions would the ombudsman take, and I want to make sure that he's clear the ombudsman on a complaint would take the exact same actions as he does on any other complaint in terms of his existing powers of investigation. So if we can just stop and go to Cavus very briefly and see whether that is a thing he's clear upon or not. Cavus, over to you.
Yes, I think it is an important issue here. We didn't want to go to IRP, and now we put something in the last decision of the ombudsman. My question is that the EC may not make a proper decision, and there should be a complaint. This is one issue. Another issue would be that a complaint would be that procedure has not been applied. And the third one is the decision has not been properly reflected and reported. These are three different issues. But why not ICANN, if they identified that, why they don't go back to the EC? Why they want to have a intermediate in that? And when the ombudsman saying that procedure has not been followed, it must give the reasons, but not just saying that has not been followed, with the reason thereof. If only about the procedure ombudsman could say, but not about the decision of the empowered community. If that is between the ICANN and empowered community to talk together, and perhaps that should be resolved. So we don't want to have a sort of the veto by the ombudsman. This is a big risk. Thank you.
Thank you, Cavus. Cheryl, for the record, I'm pleased to see Sebastian in the line, because I was going to ask if he would make a comment next, and I'm going to go to you now, Sebastian. Cavus, of course, the Ombuds Office will still respond to any complaint, but I think it would be incredulous to think that the empowered community would not interact with itself in the way you described. So I don't believe we're looking at any sort of form of veto. In fact, the ombuds would report, and with those facts expanded and published as best they can be within confidentiality, it would result in exactly the same thing that you were just proposing as essential. But let's go to Sebastian. Sebastian, over to you.
Yeah. I'll note Bernie's hand has been up also.
Thank you, Cheryl. Sebastian Macher is speaking. And yeah, I agree with you totally, Cheryl. I think what it's important to note is that if two person or two organizations have trouble together, if they discuss together and solve the problem, there is no issue to go to the ombuds. The ombuds is here to help, to be a go-between two organizations, or one person and one organization within ICANN, to help to solve the problems. The ombuds will not say, here is the solution, here you need to do that. It's ombuds will come. We try to have the people of the organization talking together, find a solution together, and he may come with a proposal, with a recommendation. But the recommendation, it's up to the complainant and the complainer to decide if they want to apply it. And therefore, I guess we all agree here, it's not to give more power to the ombuds. They have already a lot to do, but it's to see that the ombuds is the right place to solve a complaint for this type of issue that was not existing prior to Workstream 1 and what we are doing now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for the record. Two things before I go to Bernie. Oh, sorry, one thing before I go to Bernie. I hope now that that helps you understand the situation and why the text is proposed as it is in response to this public comment, Cavus. But also I think we should note, as Farzaneh has in the chat, that there is a very major difference between this type of ombuds interaction based on complaint and an independent review panel. They are vastly different indeed. Thanks for reminding us of that. Bernie, over to you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Just a note on, I know Alan put in that it should just maybe not be part directly of the recommendation, that any such action should be stopped, or there should be sort of injunction procedure if that is invoked. Having written a few of those, you want to be very careful how you want to write those, because what can happen is you can end up in a loop whereby one person will complain, and if you make it automatic that there's an injunction, then when that complaint is done, someone else files a complaint, and then automatically you end up with yet another injunction. So these types of things, the concept is good, but they have to be written very carefully to avoid creating more problems than they would solve. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie. Let's hope we don't have to write it at all. Back to you, Steve.
Caboose, is that a new hand?
Yes, a new hand.
I'm sorry, I was in another screen. Come on.
Can I talk or not?
Yes, Caboose, it's Cheryl here. I said, yes. I was sorry, I was on another screen.
Okay, thank you. I said that you have not allowed me to talk. Also, I think that we just wanted to get rid of the IRP, and now we put in another trap. So I suggest that either we retain the initial that, yes, IRP may be better than ombudsman or all of these things, I think. We don't want to go from something which is well-established, something which does not have any basis. I don't think that we should give such authority. That someone say that procedure has not been followed. This is a one-man decision. And there is no appeal to that. If that ombudsman, whoever may be, made a mistake saying that procedure has not been followed, who is going to check whether he or she is right or not? Human beings are always subject to some mistake. I don't understand this, so I please put my objections to that.
Thank you.
And I take it at the CCWG. I know that immediately people may say that I am in minority, no problem. But I don't agree. We try to resolve something and create another problem for that. This would be very, very risky that we give three major important issues to one person to decide. Procedure has not been properly followed. What reason? Decision was wrong or badly reported. These, all of them is subjective to one person's decisions. So I don't think that is the right decision. I disagree with the board's comment. I disagree with the board's comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. Steve, if I can just step in at Cheryl. I note Sebastian is going to take a right of reply here. And Caboose, the record of today's meeting has, I think, quite accurately noted and annotated everything you've said, and taking it up with the CCWG once the documents that we prepare as a final report go through is exactly the right way to go forward with this. But over to you, Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Just to underline once again that the ombuds, first of all, it's not one person, it's an office of the ombuds, but let's leave that apart. It's not a decisional office or decisional guy. He will bring back his suggestion, recommendation to the committee, and the committee will have to act. Either the complainant say, okay, I found the right answer in the discussion with the EC secretariat, or the EC will say, okay, let's go back and discuss again and transmit another decision to the board or whatever it's about. It's one of the reasons, I guess, we wanted to have something looser than the IRP. IRP is really very formal. And the other point is that the ombuds, it's not new. It's since a few years within ICANN, and I guess that the only difference is that now it will handle something for collective decision or complaints about the collective decision of SO and AC. That's the only difference from today. Thank you very much.
Hand up, Cheryl.
Back to you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you all. And I pasted into the chat the documentation of what Sebastian just said. And Caboose, it's so important for you to understand that Article 5 of the bylaws has, for over a decade, suggested that the ombuds, their charter is to act as a neutral dispute resolution practitioner for any matter not in an IRP. And it's always been in the bylaws. That hasn't changed at all. So if we were to write nothing in response to the board's comment, the ombuds would still have proper jurisdiction to try to resolve a dispute since the IRP does not apply. So the ombuds automatically has the ability to investigate a complaint, to bring parties together, and they cannot make a decision. They can only attempt to help put items back to the community in a helpful way. So we are not introducing anything new. It is in the bylaws already. The ombuds already has the ability to respond to a complaint for any matter that does not subject itself to an IRP. So feel free to bring it up to the CCWG, but we are not adding anything new. Our response to the board is to clarify to the board that we don't need to invent another mechanism. We don't want the IRP, and we don't need to invent another mechanism because the ombuds mechanism already applies with respect to whether the decisional participants in the EC followed procedure. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Steve. Cheryl, for the record. Caboose, back to you for a short and final intervention on this topic.
I think instead of inventing anything, we should say that in case of complaint, the provision of Article 5 shall apply. That's all. I fully agree with Steve what he said. It is already in the bylaw in Article 5, so we don't want to put anything, any word that we refer to him. He said that it is right. He says that in case of complaint, the provisions of Article 5 of the bylaw shall apply. Finished. Short and general. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose, for the record. And, of course, I do want to remind everybody that the text we're looking at now are responses to the public commenters, not suggested proposed changes to our report. But with that, let's move on. Back to you, Steve.
Thank you, Cheryl, and that is a great point. Farzi and I will attempt to update our final report after we finish the exercise of going through the public comment response. But the words we choose in the report are very careful. We end up being more responsive when we respond to public comments, but that doesn't mean we're putting those exact same words into the final report. All right, we bring ourselves now to the inter row regarding track 3. This is row 38. Where INTA did not agree with our conclusion about the IRP. They were alone in suggesting that the IRP should be applied. So what I propose for the text in response is this view was expressed by only one commenter and was not supported by CCWG at its face-to-face meeting. Therefore, we are holding to the consensus view that the IRP should not apply to the SOAC activities. I'll paste that into the chat, because it's a slight different than what you see in the white box on the screen. I was reflecting what Alan recommended earlier at describing that it was an isolated and not supported. Any questions there? Great. Row 39 is with regard to the registry stakeholder group, and they agreed with us, so we're going to acknowledge their support. The SAC agreed with our recommendation. We'll acknowledge their support, and there's only one row left. Mr. Santosh said the IRP cannot be made applicable. We need to decide how to deal with this. And I really think that our answer reflects what we just went through with the board. So is that we cite the ombudsman and the Workstream 2 group who believe the ombuds is able to handle these complaints. And I'll even add for Caboose, I'll even add for Article 5 of the ICANN bylaw. Okay, so Cheryl, that is all for the first read-through of all of our response to the public comments. Now, in that same document, there are only a handful of rows that have yellow text in the response, because they are rows where Farzi and I made updates since our last call to reflect what we thought was decided or concerns that were raised at our last call. There's not too many significant edits there, but I might point out a few of them if this group wanted to go through them. What's your preference for that? Would you like to go through the yellow ones?
Steve, Cheryl, for the record here, I think in the time we have left, that's an ideal plan. So if we can take the next 10 to 12 minutes only, and I think that will be ample, to go back and do now a read-through of text that was changed based on last week's discussion. Back to you, Stephen Farzi.
Thank you. And I think it's Bernie who's controlling the screen. I'll let you do that. Take it all the way to the top, and all we have to do is look at the yellow text in column E. Okay, so the first time you see it is on page 2, where we talk about track 1 and the board's comment on accountability. All we did here was update the fact that regarding having links to the AC and SO group documents, we support the board's recommendation, but that we note that staff would have the responsibility of putting those links on the ICANN website. And that was a relatively non-controversial change that we made a week ago. The next place you see the yellow text is on page 5. This is with respect to the non-commercial stakeholders group comment on term limits. And we went back and forth on this, if you recall, a week ago. So I'll give you all an opportunity to look at how Farzi and I have resolved this text. We said if we could, and we need to know whether this group wants to add a good practice to consider term limits. Of course, only for those groups that choose to hold elections. I think we differed, most of us differed with Farzi on one respect, that we do not support the imposition of country and population-based representation. Some AC and SOs achieve geographical diversity by design because they choose to have representatives from each region. So we just simply note that in response to the comment. We're not going to recommend that everybody switch to geographical representation. And we said that we will not recommend gender quotas, but we do want to ask whether the Workstream 2 group doing diversity has any recommendations that could become good practices. And I will defer to staff or Sebastian. Where is the diversity group in terms of its final report? You can answer that in the chat if you don't mind. And then finally, we believe that good practice recommendations can reduce the potential. And this is in response to the NCSG, who says, to help us understand how these recommendations can prevent capture. And all of you said on the last call, you gave me an action item to be able to respond to the NCSG. And so here's what I propose we respond. We say we believe that good practice recommendations taken together can reduce the potential for a subset of AC and SO group members to capture decision-making and officer posts. Moreover, good practices on participation should reduce the potential for a subset of members to exclude interested new members who are otherwise eligible. So what I've done there is try to attempt to explain the kind of capture we are attempting to prevent. Where did I get those words? They came from NTIA in the comments they proposed to the stress tests regarding what they said internal capture could be. They said internal capture by a subset of members and concern that incumbent members could exclude new entrants. So I think we're being responsive to both of those points. Any questions? Cheryl notes that the diversity work team report is being transmitted. And for those of you who are active in the diversity group, can anybody report as to whether there is a gender diversity suggestion or imperative that might be reflected in good practices? And while you're answering that, I'll go to Allie Greenberg in the queue.
Thank you very much. What does it mean where you say we could add a good practice to consider term limits?
That's my question to all of you.
Does that mean we are going to, or?
Alan, it is a question for this work team.
Okay.
Farzi suggested it, and we didn't dismiss it out of hand. There was not an overwhelming objection to it on the last call. So what is your pleasure, Alan?
My personal pleasure is the group should decide for itself. If you look at situations where both including where people are elected, selected, whatevered, or appointed by various groups, some have strict term limits, some have guidelines, some have none. And I don't believe we should, at our level, impose rules like that.
Okay, Alan, let's hear from everyone, and we could do tick marks, we could... Well, let me ask you this way in a positive. Who supports the idea of adding a good practice that groups who choose to hold elections should consider term limits? So look for a green check mark if you think that we would add a good practice to consider term limits. See one green check mark from Farzi. And Sebastian. Greg Shatton. Sebastian, you have your hand up, but I assume you also have a green tick. So I would note, Alan, I'm now really confused. Okay, we had Sebastian, your hand is up, so why don't you speak as well?
Yes, thank you, Steve. I just wanted to be very clear on what Alan just said. We are not imposing something when we want to put a good practice. It's not imposing something. It's just a good practice. And I don't think that it's a bad practice to have term limits. I really think the reverse. And I would really argue that as we are not imposing something, we should say that we encourage each and every group to have a term limit. Thank you.
Alan Greenberg, your hand is up.
My hand is up. We've had this discussion exhaustively when we changed the term from best practices to good practices. Regardless of whether we call them best or good, although good is a weaker form, at some level there is a stigma assigned to not following a good practice because it is something which is acknowledged to be better than the opposite. We're not saying no term limits is a bad practice. We're just think we should be silent on it, that each group should be able to decide for itself and not have a stigma associated with it or a review team every 5 years. Again, ask the question, why did you consider this and why aren't you as good as the other guys?
Alan, something that came up on a previous call was clarifying in our final report about the optional nature of good practices. And that the option is at the discretion of the AC and SO and the group, not at the discretion of some outside consultant brought in every 5 years. So we have to use those words, which I was inspired by you to put in, and that is all over the place in our report and in our response to the public comments. So all of the 25, let me just real quickly finish then. So all of the 25 good practices are qualified with the notion that they are optional and that the option is at the discretion of the group, not the consultant. So given that, do you believe that the term limits carry some special stigma that we don't want to accept?
Having just gone through an at-large review with reviewers who were of a single mind, yes, I do believe there is a difference. I understand we watered it down as much as we could. We also explicitly said the organizational review should look at whether these good practices are being followed or not. So, yes, I consider it a difference. And I personally would not put a vote in for saying this is a good practice because there is a stigma associated with not doing it. And that should be a choice that some groups have chosen to do, others have not. Within the ALAC, we have the RALO-appointed people. Some RELOs have a term limit of one term, some have two, some have none. So the standards vary, and the flexibility should be left to them.
Alan, by my count, we have three out of the nine participants on this call in favor. And Farzi, I'll turn to you.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, this is my last comment on this, just to encourage that we put it in the recommendation that for those groups that have election top time. But because, first of all, we are not really recommending how to do the time term limit. What we are recommending is to have term limits. Why? Because in this community, we see over and over that there are like people in one position for a long, long time, and then really does not cycle, and people who are new do not get the right experience to come and lead the groups. So this is, I think, would be good for us and would be good for, I don't know if we can call it like this democratic process for election. We are not saying, oh, go change your governance structure. We are not saying, oh, how to do it. We are not telling those that appoint or select that they should do it. We are just saying, if you have elections, we recommend that you have term limits. And so, well, let's not just get into appointments and selections. Let's just say, if you have elections, it's good to have term limits. I think it is the right, it should actually create some good stigma there for groups that keep having the same person over and over for like 10 years back.
Thank you, Farzi. I'm going to paste into the chat what I propose to put into the comment response, and then we'll turn to Cheryl. You look into the chat. This is what I propose. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Oh, actually, Steve, I'd like to look at what you've written in the chat first. It's Cheryl for the record. I'll read it. A minority of work team members want to add a good practice to consider term limits for ACSO groups that choose to hold elections. That dilutes it sufficiently in terms of it being a strong recommendation to have practices suggested. I can certainly live with that because I'm sure people like Alan and I, and indeed entities like ESSAC, I'd love to see their responses to this proposal, can't wait, we'll take it up with the CCWG. So let's put your text in there, Steve, and move on.
Thank you, Cheryl. Sebastian, final word on this topic? Cannot hear you, Sebastian.
Okay, now you can hear me. Sorry, it's Sebastian Machel speaking, and sorry, Steve, too. I would say disagree with you, but if I can't, when you ask for tick mark, you get three red and three green and two reds. I don't know how you can say that three is a minority view of against two reds. And if the red
no,
doesn't
three of nine.
Stick, No. You can't count like that. You need to ask the people for, the people against. You can't say just the people in one hand and all the other at the same position. Sorry. Not at all. You can't do that. Sorry.
I didn't realize that. So if you wish, we can ask for no votes if you wish. Is that what your desire is?
If you return the way you ask the question, you have to find a way to count the red and the green. If not, we don't have. And I am not pushing for a vote, but here you ask for temperature of the room. You say now there are three against all the other, and that's not fair.
If I may, with the time available to us as a reminder, and if needs be, we will have to extend this call, believe it or not, by 5 minutes or so. How exciting. Cheryl, for the record, I believe Steve's question was quite specific in asking who supported it. I think the record will show, Steve, that you asked for people to put up green ticks who supported.
That's right, Cheryl, and that's why the text said that a minority of work team members want to add it. I didn't say anything about people that were opposed. I simply said a minority want to add it. And, Sebastian, we would simply relay this to the full TCWG so that instead of the 9 of us making a decision, we'd have the benefit of everyone. I didn't even record how many opposed it. I simply said a minority prefer it. And I think that's accurate.
Okay, do we have any more text edits to very briefly review?
Yeah, I think we could do it very quickly. Yeah, I think we can do it very quickly, Cheryl. So you'll see that on page 6, we indicated we do not support the imposition of country and population-based representation. The next row says, if ICANN was to expand the list of languages that it supports, then that support should also extend to the publications made by SO and AC groups. And this was a non-controversial item that we wanted to adopt. We amended our report to indicate that exemplary reasons to close a meeting are also exemplary reasons for declaring that something is confidential. And then finally we get to the whole board discussion on mechanisms for mutual accountability. This is where we indicated that one of the board members who helped us out on this suggested that the board supports vertical accountability within the ACs and SOs. It wasn't really suggesting that we have some other accountability among and between the ACs and SOs. So I'll give you a moment to read the text in yellow on the screen at row 30 to see whether that's going to work for us. Rinalia was the board member who helped us out on the last call but is unable to be here today. We end this with a question to the board. If the board can propose an objective standard for collective accountability, but we do not have one as of yet. Farzi, your hand is up, and then Alan.
No, sorry, Steve. This was just an amateur hand up because of the previous intervention. But so I'm making changes to our report. Are we going to go to board and ask this question and come back and make a change in our report, or what would be the process?
I'd prefer to say that unless the board proposes an acceptable objective standard, we will take no further action. Because I don't want to leave this as an open item. Alan, your hand is up.
Thank you. You mentioned one before on language that I couldn't see, and if it was on the screen, I couldn't find it. But could you either read it again or point to it?
Mr. Santosh was worried that we don't do translation to enough languages. It's row 24. It's on the screen on the bottom. And we are not going to say whether 10 languages is enough or anything else. We think we will recommend that if ICANN was to expand the list of languages that it supports, and that support should be extended to the publication of SOAC and groups so that the documents that we propose could take advantage of translation services if ICANN was already adopting it for its own website.
I would make a very small change to that to say availability of those availability of this support should also be extended.
Like offered to.
The ALAC, for instance, sometimes translates things just into French and Spanish because those are the languages that we deal with. sometimes for major documents, we do all the ICANN languages, but not always. And the way it's worded, it sounds as if it is a requirement. So availability makes it an option of the ACNSO until ICANN makes some more general language policy.
All right, I'll paste that in the chat. And any other hands up? All right. I put that in the chat, Alan, made available.
Thank you.
Okay, so we covered the board, and then Ombuds handles these conflicts, which was row 37. So we are done, Cheryl. We have covered all of the rows that we edited since last week. Back to you.
Thank you very much, Steve, Cheryl, for the record. And we did manage to get through this work, and I thank everyone who could stay for the extension of by no more than 5 minutes. In the last minute or two that is left to us, I want to do two things. First of all, I will be calling for any other business. If there is any point of significant other business, I will suggest that it is taken, however, to the list, unless it is a very brief matter. And I'll note that we have another meeting in August, which has been scheduled for some time. That is August the 31st, next week, at 0500 UTC, but that so we can fully and frankly discuss any changes that we may as a sub-team or work team wish to make to our report. We have also penciled in and booked two more dates in September, which will allow us to ensure we have our final report in the hands of the plenary for its papers for its meeting late September. I think it's the 23rd of September, but it's something like that anyway. pardon me. It might be the 28th of September. The dates for September, which are new to our agenda, are Thursday the 7th of September at 1300 UTC and Thursday the 14th of September at 1900 UTC. It is my firm hope that we will not need to use both of those bookings. With that, I would like to thank everybody, in particular, the support we get from our captioners. It is enormously helpful, our fabulous staff, and each and every one of you who've been able to make today's call. And we can stop our recording, and bye for now.